Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Kaelin Davenport, Senior Lecturer in Roman History from Macquarie University. This is episode CXVI, Red Wedding. The Roman Empire had engaged in Parthian wars for generations, stretching back, off and on, to the days of Pompey the Great. Caracalla makes his foray into this arena, but as always, he's going to do things a little differently. He shall have a wedding. Or a hanging. Either way, he's going to have a little bit of fun. Here's Kaelin Davenport.
Rome and Parthia had been at odds for centuries. They're like the USSR and the USA during the Cold War. They're the two great superpowers of the Mediterranean and the Near East. And certainly in the imperial period, so campaigns under Nero, Trajan, Lucius Verus, Septimius Severus, a lot of these campaigns have been about securing the frontiers, particularly over who is going to hold the throne of Armenia, the client kingdom which lies between Rome and Parthia, whether it's going to be a Roman nominee or a Parthian nominee. Very often the civil war in Armenia or Parthia or Rome as well, you know, with Septimius Severus and Pescennius Niger, which gets caught up in the larger geopolitics of the region.
Yeah. So enemies for quite a long time going then. And what context is it in now? Who's ruling it at this point?
King Vorgaces the fifth of Parthia had died in 208, so in the reign of Septimius Severus. Now, he had two sons, the first who succeeded as Vorgaces the sixth, but the other son, Artabanus, also revolted and seized the throne. So by the time of Caracalla's reign, Artabanus does actually control most of the Parthian Empire. Vorgaces the sixth, only part of the empire in Babylonia.
Right, but it's given this opportunity for Caracalla to exploit. You've essentially got a civil war in Parthia at the moment, or at least a struggle for the throne and for supremacy. And this is something that Caracalla can make the most of. I suppose that would be one of his motives for going there at the time.
Definitely. It's an open invitation for Rome to intervene. And Caracalla, the German war was not a big war. Parthia would be a major campaign to really make him seem like the successor of Alexander the Great.
Yeah.
And this is what all Roman emperors dream of. They dream of conquering Parthia. So this is an enemy that Caracalla is itching to take on. And he's been planning this since 213. So after the German campaign, he marches east through the Danubian region and into Asia Minor. And he collects troops from the Rhine and Danube frontiers who are going to be part of this major expeditionary force. So that's why he's in the east, why he's in Asia Minor, and why he's based at Antioch in Syria.
Is there an existing relationship between him and the two claimant rulers of Parthia at the time? I'm just wondering if he's going to go there and choose sides, essentially.
Yes. So he has some reasons for why he wants to be there and why he's going to make war. So he first asks Vorgaces to surrender to him Tiridates, who was a claimant to the throne of Armenia. And here Armenia enters the picture as well, as it so often does, in that shortly after Caracalla became emperor, he actually summoned the kings of Osroene and Armenia, two kingdoms in that sort of buffer zone, to Rome. And he actually deposed King Abgar of Osroene and made the kingdom a Roman province. And the Armenian king was actually quarrelling with his two sons. Caracalla summoned them to Rome, but they declared war instead. So it's tied up with the question of the Armenian throne as well. So Caracalla says to Vorgaces, you know, give me Tiridates. And as it turns out, Vorgaces does give him Tiridates.
Yeah.
So that's not a reason for war. But Caracalla still tries to invade Armenia. There's an army which is sent out to Armenia under the command of someone called Theocritus. And he is an imperial freedman, or had been an imperial freedman, who actually had taught Caracalla to dance.
Random. Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah, I know. So, I mean, Caracalla was a very accomplished man. You know, he's horse riding, he's swimming, and he dances. So dancing in ancient Rome was a perfectly good way for an aristocratic young man to spend his time. So pantomime dancing is actually a form of ballet. And all the young men of Rome loved that because it was like a display of athleticism.
Mm.
So he's known Caracalla for a long time. But now Caracalla makes him an army commander and sends him into Armenia, but the war ends with Theocritus' defeat. So that's an unfortunate reverse in Armenia, and that's not a proper pretext for war with Parthia anymore.
Okay, so what justification does he use then for war? I almost am tempted to say, does Caracalla need justification? But he at least does have a reason to... Yeah.
Yes, Romans are obsessed with the idea of a bellum justum, a just war, that, you know, that Rome has been aggrieved and that needs to be avenged.
Sure.
But certainly he's out for glory to emulate Alexander. His next pretext for war, he actually goes to Artabanus this time, you know, and he controls most of the Parthian Empire, and asks to marry his daughter.
Yeah.
So we've talked before how Caracalla is now unmarried and childless. His wife, Portilla, was exiled and then executed. And the Parthian king refuses.
This is a very interesting proposal because if it goes ahead, it's the first time that the Roman Empire has actually used a wedding alliance on the emperor level. Middle Ages, Renaissance time, wedding alliances between rulers just becomes commonplace, even to this day. But for it to happen this early back, this would have been one of the earliest examples of a Roman emperor going through with it.
Yes, it would have been momentous if it had happened. I mean, in the Byzantine period, we hear about Byzantine empresses that are married into the ruling houses of Western Europe, for example, as you mentioned. The only earlier example I could find for marriage on the scale is in the Republican period, and even then it's not comparable, in that Cornelia, the mother of the Gracchi, Tiberius and Gaius Gracchus, after her husband Tiberius had died, received a proposal for marriage from King Ptolemy VIII of Egypt. She didn't follow through on that.
Yeah.
But that's the only precedent I could think of, really. And certainly there would be no imperial marriages on this level. So if this was something that Caracalla was genuinely contemplating, it would have been a massive shift in geopolitics at the time.
But he wasn't sincere about it by the sounds of it.
We don't think so. I mean, if we take it at face value, we might think, why would he marry a Parthian princess? So would he then become the king of Parthia as well?
Yeah.
If there were children, would Rome and Parthia become a single empire? He may have been thinking about the possibility of an heir and thought there was no suitable senatorial woman for him to marry because that might then elevate her male relatives. So he may have been looking outside Rome and really thinking outside the box completely. So there's various reasons we might speculate, but Cassius Dio says that Artabanus saw straight through it as a pretext for war. So when Artabanus said no, he said, no, this is just he knew it was coming, basically.
But this is where the sources differ, because Herodian says that Artabanus is essentially on board for it.
Yes, so Herodian gives a very different account from Dio. So Herodian 4.10.2 says, Caracalla wrote to the king that he wished to marry his daughter, that it was not fitting that he, emperor and son of an emperor, be the son-in-law of a lowly private citizen.
That's referring to Plautianus.
Yes, yes, exactly. Or anyone else that he then might marry from within the Roman Empire.
Oh, okay.
As well.
I need somebody worthy as a princess.
Yeah, I need someone from another royal family, essentially.
Yeah.
Herodian goes on to say his wish was to marry a princess, the daughter of a great king. He pointed out that the Roman and the Parthian empires were the largest in the world. If they were united by marriage, one empire without a rival would result when they were no longer divided by a river.
Mm.
Stronger together.
Yeah, it would have been a very interesting podcast to move forward with.
It would have changed the course of Roman history if it had lasted and they had children and there had been a dynasty, definitely.
But it was not to be?
No. So there was a rather unfortunate meeting of the two powers.
Essentially, we should say at this point that in Herodion, the deal for marriage is made and Caracalla heads to Parthian territory. Yes. But in Dio, the deal falls apart and was never to be taken seriously to begin with.
Exactly.
Yeah, so a very different motive for war in each of them, really.
Yes, and you're sort of wondering who
do we believe? Yeah.
Well, I would go with Dio, probably.
I know, yeah.
That's only because he's a more sober historian. He is writing at the time. He's living through the period. But you sort of wonder where Herodion got his information from. Because he did read Dio, but Dio isn't his only source because he records things that Dio doesn't. So it may be that this was a rumour that was floating around in the East, which he heard then. Of course, it could be missing from Dio, but I don't think Xiphilinus would pass up the opportunity to record such a major event if it had been in Dio's text. So I think we can say it probably wasn't in Dio at all.
Keep that in mind, but read out some Herodion because I believe that that's the most complete account of this that we've got, as in
yes,
we're not missing parts of Dio still.
Yes, yeah. Herodian's interesting just for his narrative and what it says about him as a historian. It's a wonderful example of the two sides meeting, Caracalla riding into Parthian territory. Herodian says, and this is 4.11, everywhere there were sacrifices made to him and altars strewn with garlands and all kinds of perfumes and incense offered up. Caracalla pretended to be pleased by these acts of the barbarians. And then Artabanus comes out of the city and Herodian says he greeted him as the bridegroom of his daughter and his own son-in-law. And so we then have this wonderful feast when people from the Parthian side all want to come and see Caracalla and they're all gathering around him. And Herodian says, this was the point at which Caracalla gave the signal to order his army to set upon the barbarians and kill them.
Mm.
They were thunderstruck at what happened and, wounded by a rain of blows, turned and ran. Artabanus himself was snatched from danger by his bodyguard and placed on a horse, and so only just escaped with a few followers. But the rest of the barbarians, who were dismounted and standing about after letting their horses out to graze, were cut down without the horses that were essential to them. The Red Wedding, Roman style.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
In which Caracalla and his forces turn on the Parthians.
They're being greeted under a totally different pretext of, you know, we're here to celebrate everything. And suddenly, well, Herodian puts it as, what need for weapons at a wedding?
Yes.
So this is how unprepared the Parthians were taken by this.
Very much so. And it's interesting that even though Herodian has this story, the end point is the same. They're still at war with Parthia. The marriage doesn't go ahead. So, I mean, was there some kind of meeting which then rumours began that there was some kind of massacre? It's interesting because Dio has Caracalla attacking the city of Arbela and ransacking the Parthian royal tombs. So there's a much more aggressive entry into Parthia that we see there, as opposed to, I come in peace, we're going to have a wedding, a union of our two sides here. So it's quite a different story which is being told.
So if there, for argument's sake, was a wedding, the Herodian account does not paint Caracalla in very good light at all. He's somebody who betrayed an alliance that he promised. And if this actually happened, Dio is critical enough of Caracalla to have this account in there.
I would think so, definitely,
yeah.
Because I would say the point of this entire book in Cassius Dio is to undermine systematically every part of Caracalla's public image.
Mm.
The idea, you know, that he's a fellow soldier with his troops, the idea that seeking help for illness is actually indication of his crazed mind, the fact that he's not self-controlled but really engaging in obscene acts. On so many different levels, Dio undermines Caracalla's public image.
Yeah.
So if he knew of a wedding, I can certainly say that he would have put that in as part of his narrative.
So there is a war at any rate. according to Herodian, this is the opening salvo, I suppose. But the end result in both texts is there's a war.
Yes.
And Caracalla gets his title, which I suppose is something that he'd really want, of Parthicus Maximus.
Yes, greatest conqueror of Parthia. It's really interesting that Cassius Dio has read Caracalla's account of his campaigns.
He does mention that. He name-drops saying, yeah, that I've read it.
So there were perhaps commentary, perhaps like Julius Caesar. Yeah. Shout out to other podcasts there on the Gallic War. Trajan is also known to have written commentary on his Dacian War. So it seems to have been a genre which emperors embraced. So Dio says, you know, he disagrees with what Caracalla says, but he had read them. So again, if the wedding had been in there, that would have been something probably mentioned.
But why would Caracalla write about the wedding if there was such a...
Well, he may have turned it against and said the Parthians attacked first or
something like that. There were daggers in the cake. Mm. Yeah. What do we know or what do we need to know, etc., about the rest of the Parthian war as it unfolds?
Caracalla had amassed a huge army for this campaign. So it probably included between 80 to 90,000 troops. So at the core of that was the Legio II Parthica, the second Parthian legion, which had been founded by his father Septimius Severus during his Parthian campaigns. And that was the one stationed at Albanum outside Rome. So that's starting to develop in the 3rd century as a legion which always goes with the emperor. So there's that legion, the Praetorian cohorts, and the Equites Singulares, which are the emperor's horse guards. And then he has what we call vexillations. That's a fancy word for detachments from legions all down the German and Rhine frontiers. So this means the entire legion doesn't come, but detachments are seconded for this campaign army. It's a massive force. He has his 2 Praetorian prefects with him, Marcus Oclotinius Adventus and Marcus Opellius Macrinus. So they're part of his campaign high command there as well. Apparently he didn't like the heat of Syria. He obviously preferred the cold climates of northern Europe where he could huddle in his cloak, but apparently Caracalla found that quite oppressive. One of the other interesting stories we have about the Parthian campaigns are his association with lions.
Yeah, that was strange.
It's a very puzzling passage from Cassius Dio.
Because Dio usually doesn't indulge in those sort of mythological elements, almost. Is that a fair way to say?
Yeah, I mean, he can have dreams and portents, but they're this usually about him rather than... this is something that apparently happened rather than, you know, a sign that you're going to become emperor or Septimius Severus telling Dio to write history or something
like that. So essentially he goes full Tarzan with lions.
Yes, he does, yes.
For those of us playing at home. So read out the passage in question.
So this is from Cassius Dio 79.1. The barbarians took refuge in the mountains beyond the Tigris in order to complete their preparations. But Antoninus suppressed this fact and took to himself as much credit as if he had utterly vanquished these foes, whom, as a matter of fact, he had not even seen, and he was particularly elated because, as he himself wrote, a lion had suddenly run down from a mountain and fought on his side.
Okay, well, here I can take that as he's reporting what Caracalla wrote. So yes. Caracalla believed this. So this is not necessarily Dio.
Yes, this is what Caracalla writes in his account of the Parthian War, so that you know that a lion came to his side. But then Dio goes on to talk about how Caracalla kept lions about him and that he would stroke them at dinner, particularly one he called Rapier. And, you know, they'd be in his bedchamber and, you know, he'd be sitting there, you know, like an evil Bond villain rather than being the cat, he would stroke a lion. I think they must have been rather small baby lions.
Who knows? Yeah.
I don't know enough about lions, but generally, you know, they would eat you, I think, unless, you know, they're very well trained. Rather than, you know, Aslan from Narnia or something something like that. I don't know,
quite a scale. Different mental image of a baby lion fighting by your side.
Yes, I realise that. But you know, if he keeps one called Rapier, what kind of lion is that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because he does have centurions whom he calls lions as well. And at one point I thought, oh, he was talking about them.
About a centurion.
About centurions, but, you know.
You wouldn't stroke them over dinner.
You wouldn't stroke them at dinner. Yes, exactly.
Well,
yes.
Yeah.
Let's not go there. But, yeah, so there seems to be this lion guard as well as these real lions. But he obviously thought that lions were these animals that would protect him on this campaign.
Yeah. So a campaign against Parthia is quite a big deal, and he's gone in there with an objective. So how much did he get out of fighting the Parthians? Was this a big result for Caracalla?
Not really. It was very inconclusive. Herodian tells us that he marched, and I'm quoting here from 4.11.8, that he marched throughout the length and breadth of the Parthian territory until even his soldiers were exhausted from looting and killing, and he returned to Mesopotamia.
Mm.
So he does send a dispatch to the Senate announcing a victory, and we do find coins referring to a Parthian victory, but he didn't receive the title Parthicus Maximus again. He'd already actually had that from his father's victories.
Yeah.
So it was very inconclusive, and there was no great triumph of which he could return to Rome to celebrate. So he was remaining in the region to continue his campaigns, because obviously he wanted to defeat Artabanus in person, but that was never to be, because he was murdered before he could continue the campaign.
That's Dr. Kaelin Davenport, Senior Lecturer in Roman History at Macquarie University, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it in Apple Podcasts or your local friendly neighbourhood podcatching service. Please leave a review. They make us feel warm and fuzzy. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow both myself and Kaelin on Twitter. Kaelin is at Dr. C. Davenport. I am at Nightlight Guy, and the podcast is at Rome Podcast. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, Caracalla meets the end that many thinks he deserved. And who am I to argue? But until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.